This is Dish and Dirt with Gary Pickren, South Carolina's only podcast dedicated to the real estate agent craft. And now, the host of Dish and Dirt, Gary Pickren.
And greetings and welcome back, everyone, to yet another episode of Dish and Dirt. I'm your often opinionated but rarely wrong host, Gary Pickren, coming to you from Blair, Cato, Pickren, Castellon, beautiful downtown Columbia, South Carolina. This is hot and last week of June 2023. It's going to be a scorcher out there, finally. Been very blessed with very mild weather, but now it looks like we're finally getting into the southern heat and humidity. But I am back in the saddle in the Columbia office this week after recording last week from our Malden office. A nice shout out to the guys up in our Malden office for always being so good and kind. And fantastic office up there. I love our staff there. Now, this week is the week before the 4th of July. Next week will be the 4th of July, and our offices will be closed on July 3rd and July 4th. We're giving our staff 2 days because they've worked so hard. So there will not be a Dish and Dirt for you next week. And I know that's probably the most heartbreaking news many of you have heard in many months. Well, maybe one or two of you have nothing else going on. But anyway, I will be back the following week with yet another show. So I promise you'll get plenty of Dish and Dirt to come. And next week, why don't you just use next week to catch up on some of the older episodes that maybe you missed in the past. All of them are on there. Just go check that platform out and you can look at all the previous episodes as well. So this week is all about catching up on some legal issues that are coming back in the marketplace, coming back around, and we're continuing to see these as we start picking up volume in the summer. It does seem nice to see that the market seems to be picking up. Even Inman News this week reported an uptick in the market. So hopefully, fingers crossed, this is something that we'll continue to see throughout the summer into the fall. But we're starting to see some volume increase. Now, with the volume increasing, we are starting to see these four legal issues really starting to come up again, and so we're going to address them. Two of them I've addressed in the past, but I need to go ahead and hit on them again right now. And then two of them are items that we talked about at the Real Estate Commission, which there's one has a consensus on, one does not. So let's go ahead and start talking about what these four things are. First of all, multiple offers. Done an entire podcast on multiple offers. In fact, it was the number one podcast I've had, and I think it ranks number one or number two for listeners. The second issue we're going to talk about is going to be appraisal gaps. I also did a podcast on that last year, but we're going to talk about it once again. Third thing we're going to talk about is, can you sit in open houses for other agents? Can you do tasks for other agents? And does it matter if they are or are not being supervised by the same broker in charge that you are supervised by? And then finally, we're going to talk about the advertising of other agents' listings. Can you do that? Can you put someone else's listings on your social media, give them credit? Does that violate law if you do give them credit? If you don't give them credit, clearly does. But what happens if you're giving them credit and you put it on your social media? Is that going to be a violation? So let's go ahead and get started real quick because we have a lot to cover. Last week, I was on the phone with a really good agent friend of mine named Nicole, and she had some questions about the appraisal gap. What we talked about during that conversation was that Nicole was starting to experience a large number of multiple offers on all of her listings, often with appraisal gap clauses. She said that if you have a very nice house, priced right, we're starting to see more and more multiple offers. In fact, she says pretty much every property she has is receiving multiple offers again, and that these offers are all coming with appraisal gaps, which brings a lot of issues because how are the appraisal gaps written? Are they properly written or not? But we'll talk about appraisal gaps in just a second, but first we're going to do multiple offers. I feel like I have said this at least 1 million times, maybe more, but apparently there's still a lot of real estate agents out there who simply either don't get it, aren't listening to us, or just don't care. They need to understand, under South Carolina law, and I'm talking about 40-57, the real estate agent law, this is what governs you as a real estate agent, you must know, you have absolutely no, zero right to know if the seller has multiple offers, or in fact, if they have any offers. In fact, you have absolutely no right, zero right, to know anything about the negotiations that have already taken place on that property. In fact, you don't even have the right to know if an offer has ever been submitted, or if anyone's ever even looked at the house, anyone's ever even crossed the threshold of the house to look at it. It's none of your business, period. You don't have any right. It is up to the seller to decide what to do with that information. But for some reason in this marketplace, we still have lots of agents, and I mean good agents, who continue to spout off at the mouth saying that real estate agent, listing agent must tell me if there's multiple offers. Do real estate agents make complete asses of themselves when they demand that a seller notify them that they have multiple offers, and when the seller accepts another offer and didn't disclose to them that they had other offers on the table, watching these agents raise hell and act like complete asses, saying, you didn't tell me you had multiple offers, and I had a right to know, and I had a right to resubmit my offer. No, 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 and hell no. You have no right, period. That's it. End of story. And I don't understand why we have agents out there that are still continually pushing this wrong narrative that the listing agent had some duty to let them know when they were looking at the house or submitting an offer, that there was some duty that the listing agent had to let them know that somebody else was looking at the house, or that they got another offer, or they were negotiating another offer. And before they accepted this offer, they had to let you know all this and give you another shot at it. No, you're not entitled to any of that. Make your best shot, your first shot. I'm sorry, but that's how the marketplace works. You aren't entitled to any of this information, period. End of story. Stop doing this. And it's really embarrassing to watch the number of quality agents out there arguing with listing agents about this issue. And they're completely wrong. The listing agent has an absolute duty of confidentiality. You remember those old car duties you learned when you took real estate school? Obedience, loyalty, disclosure, confidentiality, accounting, and reasonable care. Well, guess what? One of them's called confidentiality, and that's probably the most important of all those duties. In fact, it's the duty that survives the termination or consummation of the agency agreement. Once the agency agreement's either consummated, meaning they complete the transaction and sell the house, or if they terminate it either through expiration or just termination, the duty of confidentiality survives forever. So in a lot of people's minds, a lot of the teachers who teach real estate, a lot of our minds is the confidentiality under the statute is probably the most important duty. So whether or not the seller has other offers, other interests, other negotiations going is completely confidential. And a listing agent may never, ever answer that question unless the seller gives permission. So as a listing agent, if you're asked, hey, is anybody else looking at this house, or what interest do you have in this house, or how many people have looked at it? Do you have any offers? Are you expecting any offers? The only answer you are legally allowed to say at that point is, I need to ask my seller their position on disclosing that information. You can't say no, not yet, or anything other than I can't disclose that information without discussing that with my seller. Now, buyer's agents, you can ask this all day long. Maybe you'll find an agent who's stupid and answers the question without consulting their sellers. If they do, they violated the duty of confidentiality. But what a listing agent must do is talk to their seller first and get permission from their seller to disclose or directions on how to disclose it. So why would a seller just not disclose this? I mean, wouldn't that be smart? The answer is no, because there's a lot of strategy involved with multiple offers. For example, if I have five multiple offers, one's really good and four are really bad, I don't want to go to everybody and tell them I have multiple offers to give me your best and final, because my first and my best offer may back out and say, well, I'm not getting in a bidding war. And so I may lose my best offer for these other four. If I have three really good ones and three really bad ones, maybe I do want to go and ask for best and final because I figure all three aren't going to bail on me. And maybe that'll get my other three up. But if I do disclose I have multiple offers, do I want to disclose the range? Do I want to tell them the highest one? Maybe if I tell them the highest one, they'll only come in $1,000 over that. Maybe if I don't tell them, I might get a number way above that. There's so many different strategies involved with multiple offers that you can't just say it's always in the best interest of the seller to disclose, because it is not. And oftentimes it's in the best interest of the seller not to disclose at all. Let the seller decide. You as a real estate agent, as a listing agent, your duty is to explain what multiple offers means to your seller. Explain the different strategies that could be incorporated here, and then let your seller client make the decision. As a real estate agent at the Central Carolina Realtors Association market, CCRA has developed really good forms that you can use. Now, you are not required under any stretch of the imagination to use these forms. These are here as tools to help you, and that's what I do like about the Realtors Association. They are looking for ways to help you be a better agent. CCRA came up with these forms to help you be a better agent. The first form is to notify your seller that you have multiple offers. And it gives them some different strategies. I think we put five strategies on there that they could possibly use in responding to the multiple offers. There's also a space on there for them to write what they want the strategy to be. It's our suggestion, it's my suggestion, that anytime you have multiple offers, you need to get written instructions from your seller. Do we disclose? If we disclose, what are we disclosing? Are we disclosing how many offers we have or not how many offers we have? Are we discussing the range? Are we discussing the highest and lowest? What are we offering in terms of information to the other side? It's very important to be very clear and have it in writing so that your seller cannot come back on you later and say, I didn't authorize you to disclose this. Then CCRA has a second form that you go to the sellers with saying, we have multiple offers and this is the date and time we would like your final, best and final offer. Now, please understand, buyer's agents, that even if the seller comes back and says, we have multiple offers and I'm calling for your best and final by 5 o'clock on Friday, that does not preclude the seller from ending negotiations and ending that time and accepting another offer. So if the first person comes back today at 30 minutes later with an offer that just blows his socks off, he doesn't have to wait till 5 o'clock on Friday to accept that offer to turn yours down. He can go ahead and accept those. So understand, just because a seller says, I'll accept best and final up to a certain time, does not preclude him from accepting a better offer anytime throughout that process. Period. End of story. Quit making an ass of yourself going around saying anything else. That's the rule. That's how it works. Be done with it. So make sure you're getting your instructions from your seller and make sure you're not disclosing that information without permission. Now, let's talk about the appraisal gap. We are still seeing way too many addendum on this that simply come in that do not cover the entire issue. Typically, what we're seeing is something that says along the line like this. Buyer agrees to pay $10,000 over appraised value not to exceed the sales price. There's so many problems with that statement right there. I could do a whole hour on just that little statement. $10,000 over appraised value not to exceed the sales price. But let's, for the sake of time, go over a few of them. I think what the buyer and the seller are expecting at this time is to pay up to $10,000 over the appraised value because they think the house will likely appraise for about $10,000 less than the contract. But what if the house appraises for a lot more than the actual contract? Does the seller still have to sell it? And if so, what price? At the appraised value plus $10,000? Or is it, I guess in this one, we're saying not to see the sales price, we're going to do the sales price, but the seller now is sitting there looking at a house that appraised for $30,000 or $40,000 more than the sales price. They don't want to sell it for the sales price anymore. They want to sell it for more. Does the seller still have to sell or can they get out? What happens if it appraises for a lot less? And I mean a ton less. Let's say $25,000 less. Does the seller still have to sell under the scenario? Does the buyer still have to even buy it at that scenario? Because it says they agreed to pay $10,000 over the appraised value, not to exceed the sales price, but there was nothing that talked about a floor. Do the parties control their own cancellation? Who gets to cancel? How do they cancel? This goes back to what you've learned in middle school about writing. You have to cover the who, what, when, where, and how. So does $10,000 over appraised value not to exceed the sales price cover any of that? Really, it doesn't. So when you're writing these provisions or you are representing a seller who gets one of these provisions, you need to stop what you're doing and fix it. Have you thought about all of the possibilities? Did you cover all of the possibilities? Did you play devil's advocate and think about this? Everybody in this situation I was just talking about thought the house would appraise for a fair price, and then $10,000 over would get it appraised gap, would get it to what your sales price was. So they thought on a $300,000 house, perhaps it was going to appraise at $290,000. And so when they had the 10, it would come in at $300,000. Everybody would be happy. But did you play the devil's advocate side? Did you talk about what happens if it comes in at $250,000? If it comes in at $325,000? If it comes in at $298,000? Are we moving it up $2,000? Or are we adding $10,000? Do we talk about all that? Who can terminate it if it does have these things? There always has to be a floor and there always has to be a ceiling. But there also needs to be explanation if the floor is not hit. Explanation if the ceiling is not hit. So example, again, contract's $300,000 plus an appraisal gap of $10,000. Let's say the property appraises for $275,000. So the price is now $285,000. Does the seller have to still sell it at $285,000? Does the buyer still have to buy it at the $285,000? Perhaps the buyer looks at it and goes, wow, I thought this house was worth at least $300,000. It's only worth $285,000. I think I'm overpaying now. I don't really want to buy this house. But maybe the seller's looking at it saying $285,000. I thought I was going to get closer to $300,000. I don't want to sell the house for $15,000. So now you got a situation of neither party, or maybe one party does and one doesn't want to buy the property. Let's say you set the floor at $280,000. Does the $10,000 now make it above the floor, or is the floor with the $10,000? So can you come below the floor but add the $10,000 and bring you to the floor, or are they saying the floor is the floor, then you add $10,000? So if the floor is 280 and it hits at 275, it's 285, but the 275 didn't hit the floor. So are we trying to say the 275 had to hit the floor, the appraisal has to be at least 280, or are we saying the appraisal plus the 10,000 has to hit the 280? Same thing on the ceiling here. The house appraises at $298,000. You said it's $300,000 plus an appraisal gap of $10,000. So are we now, but you set the maximum as the contract sales price. Does this now create an issue that allows the seller to terminate because we said under no circumstances could it be over $300,000, but with a $10,000 appraisal gap, it's $308,000. So now can the seller terminate? The point is you have to be very particular and very detailed in discussing this. You could even set it out in bullet points if you need to. Always make sure you're discussing what happens if it comes below the appraised value. What happens if it comes above the appraised value? Who can terminate? Under what conditions can they terminate? Does the gap money count toward the floor or the ceiling, or does it not? Take your time and really think it out. Really think it out, because we see too many issues here, too many arguments that occur after the appraisal comes in, and we want to make sure that these issues are resolved before the party signed the contract and not fought over afterwards. So now let's move to the third thing. Let's talk about sitting in an open house for another agent. In fact, you could even take it further than sitting in an open house. You could take it all the way to performing any task for another agent. Can I perform other tasks for another agent? Well, if that agent works for the same broker in charge, that's probably not that big of an issue, because if you think about it this way, who owns the listing? Who owns the buyer? You have no clients. And I want to make sure everybody listening to this podcast nationwide, no real estate agent owns a client. They're all owned by the broker. All the brokers own the clients. You don't have any clients. So it's rather hilarious when we come into the real estate commission hearings and they're like, well, this was my client. No, it's not your client. It's the broker's client. The fact you're sitting here telling us that this is your client tells us you don't even understand the most basic principles of real estate. The client is not owned by you. It's owned by your broker. So when the broker owns the client, if you both work for the same broker, you can do tasks because you're a sub-agent of that broker. You're working for the benefit of that broker in charge, and they can appoint you to do this task and this task and this task. So that's fine. But what we're really talking about is when you don't work for the same broker. So I want to break this down. Sitting in an open house or even showing a house requires a real estate license. If you look at South Carolina Law 40-57-135K, it says you're unlicensed assistant cannot conduct or host an open house or show real property for sale. That's number 5 and number 6 under Section K. This is without dispute. So if your unlicensed assistant can't do it, an unlicensed person can't do it. But nevertheless, we know that it takes a real estate license to show houses, to host open houses, without dispute. Now, we also know that a licensee must work under the supervision and be licensed under one broker in charge. That's 40-57-330. And in fact, if you go back and look at 135, it also says for all types of real estate transactions, a licensee must work under the supervision of a broker in charge. A broker in charge. That's singular. So let's put all that together now. It's clear that you have to have a license to show real estate. Nobody's going to argue with that. It's also clear you must work under the supervision of a broker. And it's also very clear that you must work under the supervision of only one broker. So how exactly can you show property or do anything for an agent that's also not supervised by your broker? Because your broker supervises every single action you have in real estate. And the listing belongs to the broker. So if your broker doesn't have the listing, that means another broker has the listing and supervises everything involved with that listing. So if you're sitting in an open house or you're conducting a showing and it's not your listing, then you have violated the rule because you are working for another broker. Now, when I say showing a listing, I don't mean showing your buyer. I mean showing for the seller. Make sure you understand that. But if Nicole has a listing and she's supervised by a broker and I She calls me up and says, I'm going to be out of town. Can you come sit at my listing for this open house? And I have a different broker. I am being supervised by my broker, and sitting in her open house is now being supervised by a second broker. So I am being supervised by two brokers, which is illegal. So no, you cannot sit site. You cannot show open houses for the seller, for another agent. You really can't do anything for another agent who is not supervised by the same big. Make sure you understand that. Same big, not same brokerage. So if you work at a big brokerage like Keller Williams or Coldwell Banker, C21, whatever at brokerage you want to say, EXP, you cannot call another agent who is supervised at a different office by a different broker and say, I'm going to be out of town this weekend. Can you please show my buyer clients around? Can you please sit open house for me? The answer is no. Just because you work for the same brokerage doesn't matter. Understand, brokerages don't really mean much of anything under our law. It's all about the broker in charge. So you'll all need to stop doing this. You can't sit model homes for builders. The builders are asking, you know, I've actually seen emails say it to agents saying, any agent in Columbia want to sit our open houses this week, please let us know and you can come sit in our models. You cannot do that. You don't have, your broker does not have that listing for that model home. You may not sit there. You can't show a home for a friend agent. You can't take a friend's agent buyers and show them around unless they're being, you're supervised by the same broker. You can't sit open houses unless they have a listing. End of story. That also means you may not use a company or service that lets you hire an agent to sit for you. I've seen those out there recently where you can pay $25 and they'll get you a licensed agent in your market to come sit your open house or show your buyers or do anything for you. Cannot do that. And don't tell me, well, I'll just offer customer service. I won't offer client service. You are still working for two BICs and doing so, whether you're providing customer service or client service, it doesn't matter. It's still under the supervision of a broker in charge. And it could also be said now that you're probably interfering with the agency of the other broker as well. So do not do that. All right, lastly, let's look at advertising of another agent's listing. Unfortunately, what I can tell you about this today is this is not settled. In fact, the Real Estate Commission, I think we just had an open hearing on this last week, and I think we got about 50 opinions in about 5 minutes. And in fact, at a CCRA broker roundtable, we had multiple opinions going around, even amongst the members of the state association. In fact, I think I agree with Byron King, but I disagree with Austin and Nick. And it's not that I think they're wrong. I think they have extremely valid points. I just think there's two different ways of looking at this. And I don't know that any of us are right. In fact, looking at the Real Estate Commission meeting last week on this, I don't know what the answer is. And so I don't really know what to tell you. So you'll like my non-lawyer answer here in a minute. So let me walk you through this, because I'm going to argue it both ways so that you can see the dilemma here. So state law is clear that you may not advertise for sale property belonging to another without a signed listing agreement from the property owner. Again, I'll use Nicole. If Nicole has a listing, how can I market the property? Because I don't have a signed listing. And if I put her listing on my social media, am I not marketing or advertising? We know that marketing and advertising also includes social media. So I think it's pretty straightforward. And I think the people like Austin, my friend, who agrees or disagrees with me on this, and that's perfectly fine. I think he takes this position. He's taking a very conservative view of the statute. The statute says you cannot advertise property belonging to another without a signed listing agreement. And that's what his position is. You don't have a signed agreement, so you can't. And so that is a very solid argument. Very solid argument. So that's how I would argue that side. If I was going to argue you can't do it, I'm simply going to point to the statute that says you're required to have a signed listing agreement from the property owner. You have nothing. You can't do it. Stop doing it. Now, let's argue the other side. How about the MLS, Multiple Listing Service? Multiple Listing Service allows this. So if we're to now say you can't market or advertise property belonging to another, how does Zillow and Realtor.com do it? Well, I can tell you how they do it, because they have an agreement through the Multiple Listing Service to push out those to the IDX feed, through the IDX feeds. We all, as agents, want that. We want to be able to post it in one place, like the Multiple Listing Service, and have them push it out to 60 or 70 different services. We don't want to have to put it in the MLS and then go put it in Zillow and then go put it in Realtor.com and then all the other different locations. So it's actually a very valuable benefit of being a member of the MLS is that they push it out to all of these different services. But does that not violate the law for Zillow to be advertising and marketing my listing? I didn't give Zillow, my client didn't sign Zillow's listing to allow them to do so. But when your broker in charge joins the multiple listing service, he signs an agreement that allows listings to be shared through the IDX. And apparently nobody has any problem with that. Real estate commissions across the country don't seem to have problems with multiple listing services sharing listing information through an IDX feed. So when your broker joins, they give permission to other brokers to take that and market that property, not only through Zillow, but if I post something through the MLS, your broker can actually pull that off the IDX feed and post it on their website as a property for sale, as long as I get credit for it. But on the other hand of that, how do you allow somebody to break the law through an agreement? I mean, you can't do that either. I can't allow you to break the law if my client says, don't bring me any offer that doesn't at least start with a five in front of it. If I get a $400,000 offer, I still have to present the offer. Just because my client told me not to doesn't allow me to violate the law. So how does this allow us to violate the law? If the law simply says I can't market property belonging to the other without a signed listing agreement, how does joining the MLS and signing an agreement there that all of the listings can be shared through the IDX feed allow us to do that? And then secondly, is it just the IDX feed itself I can share? Or can I share other things? Can I drive by the house, see this wonderful, beautiful house in this neighborhood that I know is going to be hot, take a picture of it, put it on social media, and say, look at Nicole's house at such and such brokerage that she's just listed. If anybody wants to see it, give me a call. I'll be happy to show any potential buyer this house. Does that violate the law? Because that's not clearly an IDX feed picture. I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know that anybody knows the answer. But personally, I just don't understand why any agent's getting butthurt over this in the first place. Do you not want someone to buy the house? I mean, advertise my stuff all day long. If I was a listing agent, I hope every single one of you drives by my house and takes a billion pictures and posts them all over the social media, and somebody brings me a buyer. That's the whole purpose of listing a house, is to try to get somebody there. So I don't really understand why everybody's complaining and getting so butthurt over this. It seems that this has become a huge issue recently, and I don't know why, other than it's just agent envy. And it usually seems that the persons who are complaining aren't the listing agent or the person who took the picture. It seems to be somebody who's not even related to the transaction that seems to be throwing everybody under the bus here. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I clearly showed you I could argue both sides. I think we had a very spirited and wonderful discussion about it at the Realtor Broker Roundtable. I think Byron and I argued one side, and Austin and Nick argued the other side, and everybody made excellent points. And there was still no consensus even after we had the discussion. So this is something I think we're going to have to continue to monitor. Be very careful. I can tell you that if you do market or advertise anyone's property on social media or otherwise, I can guarantee you, you have to provide credit to that agent and that brokerage. So if I had a listing and you took a picture of it, at a minimum, you need to put offered by Gary Pickren at Blair Cato Realty. Don't just put the picture up there and then not give credit where credit is due. So that's my complete non-answer for you today. I hope you enjoyed that non-answer. But frankly, I don't know that we can give you a better answer than that until some type of ruling is had. All right. So those are the four big issues that we're seeing right now that I think everybody needs to be aware of as we work our way through the summer. I hope everybody gets something out of that. I hope y'all enjoy your 4th of July. Please be very safe. So y'all have a wonderful 4th, and we will see you back for Dish and Dirt again next week. Don't forget to like us, share us, and subscribe to Dish and Dirt. And y'all have a wonderful holiday week. Take care.